Dragons, the Bells, and Unicorns. I'm Rosemary DeCuna, founder and CEO of the Center for Advanced Innovation, and I'm here with Gregory Charlotte. Gregory is a doctor, a speaker, longevity expert. He's also the author of Why Doctors Skip Breakfast, Wellness Tips to Reverse Aging, we all want that, Treat Depression, and Get a Good Night's Sleep. Dr. Charlotte runs an anti-aging telemedicine clinic based in Beverly Hills, California. And we're going to put our show notes how you can contact him. So welcome, Gregory. We're really so thrilled to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
So can you talk a little bit more about what kind of doctor you are?
Sure. So I'm trained as an anesthesiologist, and I have two kind of main focuses. I take care of a lot of kids and babies, but lately I've really been focused also on plastic surgery. So I live in Beverly Hills, and we take care of a lot of patients, celebrities, Instagram people, actors, things like that, that are getting plastic surgery. And so a lot of what we're doing focuses on looking good and feeling good and that kind of thing. So my big emphasis now beyond anesthesia is wellness, longevity medicine, like you talked about, nutrition, ways of using supplements and things like that to make us live longer, to sleep better, and also to treat depression.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so why do doctors skip breakfast?
Because we get up too early as it is and we don't have time to eat breakfast. Should see when we wake up. I'll tell you. So here's how it originally started. I worked for many years in a complex medical center, really sick patients, big surgeries, you name it. And we'd always go and we'd hang out, before surgery would start. So it'd be me and there'd be other anesthesiologists and some surgeons. And these are like big name people, like they went to Harvard and MIT and everything. And you look around and there's books and there's surgical supplies and there's coffee mugs and everything else, but there's no food. And so, and you and I chat about this. So I don't eat breakfast because I fast. And I noticed that like almost nobody else ate breakfast either. And I thought, well, maybe they just didn't want to get up early, but so I asked them and almost every single one of them was also fasting. And so then that made me kind of think, well, this is what people do. Like the word has gone out, people know like we should fast. But then I started looking around and noticed everybody else, including my parents, are eating breakfast all the time. And so it made me realize there's this big disconnect between what we're doing in the medical field for ourselves and kind of what we're teaching and what we're preaching to other people.
So what does fasting do for you?
Excellent question. It makes you live longer. So it's interesting. So there's all kinds of studies done in animals and, they're always looking at all these different dietary changes you could do for animals to make them live longer. There's like keto diets for animals, paleo diets, organic, more vegetables, less vegetables, more protein, less protein, like you name it. They've tried these diets on animals. The only diet that's really had a significant effect on the length of animals' lives is fasting them. And it's dramatic. Like there have been some studies where you can lengthen an animal's life by 40%+. I mean, the difference between, a fasted and unfasted animal is dramatic. And the funny thing is, there's different ways to do it. You could either calorie restrict them and they live longer if you do that, meaning they eat when they want to, but just not as much. There's a funny video on YouTube about this French bulldog that was calorie restricted. It wasn't very happy, but calorie restrictions one, or another one, which is what I would consider fasting, intermittent fasting, where you time restrict, meaning that there's a certain window of time you could eat and they could have as much as you want during that window, but then you can't eat the rest of the day. And that's what I do. And that's what the other doctors do. And it's interesting that these animals, they live longer with this time-restricted feeding, even if they eat the same number of calories. So I'm making this number up, but say a mouse has like 400 calories a day. I don't know how many calories a mouse eats, but if they cram that 400 calories into, say, like a four-hour window, they'll live longer than if they eat those 400 calories over the day.
Well, I would never skip breakfast, but as you know, because I would probably be not very kind to people. but that I only eat vegetables and seafood and one egg white a day. and basically no carbohydrates, no red meat, no freshwater fish. And then you were kind of pondering that, and you said, well, you're kind of doing it anyway. You kind of are fasting because it's your diet.
Right.
I think you said. So what does it do to your body? I mean, I guess the point of what I was saying was there's a variety of ways to interpret it. What you're talking about. You said there's two major ones, but just because of my particular diet, for example, it would be almost the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'll tell you, there's a few theories as to why fasting helps. And it actually helps with a lot of things, not just lifespan. It decreases autoimmune diseases. It probably decreases Alzheimer's disease. It decreases cancer and it improves treatment for cancer. Some people with cancer that fast, they actually, their cancers get better. They tolerate chemotherapy better. I mean, there's all kinds of benefits. So then the question is why? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, why does it matter if you, compress your eating? And so there's a few theories why compressed eating helps. Mm-hmm. One of them is that over the course of the day, it keeps your blood sugar low and your insulin low. So if you go and eat a bagel, for example, your blood sugar is going to shoot up because you have all these carbs. Mm-hmm. And then your insulin level will shoot up. That's your body's attempt to get your blood sugar back down. And the insulin basically takes the sugar out of your blood and puts it mostly into your fat cells. Mm-hmm. So one of the theories is if you compress the time you eat to this little window of time, then what happens is even if you eat terribly during that time, at least you just have this small period of time where your blood sugar and insulin are high. Uh-huh. And then the rest of the day, the other say 16 hours you're not eating, your blood sugar and insulin are low. So even if you're going to Dunkin' Donuts, which by the way, I'm a big fan of, they have good coffee if you haven't tried it. So even if you're going to Dunkin' Donuts during those say 4 or 6 hours you're eating, at least the rest of the day, your blood sugar and your insulin level is low. So that's one theory. Another theory is it may help the bacteria living in our intestines. They're not really used to getting barraged by a constant stream of garbage, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you think our ancestors, you know, our ancestors were not having 50 snacks a day, you know, they would eat when they could and then they would go periods of time where they didn't. And so the microbes in our gut evolved to, you know, that's what they wanted because that's how they evolved. That's because that's how we ate for most of our life. And so, and then the third thing is there are certain longevity genes. And this is actually one of the really exciting kind of newer things that came out. It turns out we have some genes that if you either turn them on or off the right way, it makes you live longer. They're called sirtuins and mTOR. There's a bunch of them. This is all like hot off the presses stuff. And this is one of the big things we talk about in the book, Why Doctors Skip Breakfast. And it's hot stuff. Harvard, USC, UCLA, those places have done a lot of research on it. And so we think that fasting turns these longevity genes on the right way.
Oh.
When you put yourself in this starvation mode, you know, if your body thinks you're starving, it actually causes your body to like rebuild and beef itself up and kind of hunker down, you know, and that's what you want. And so with your diet, because, you know, we talked about this and you eat, like you said, mostly vegetables and seafood. So my guess is that your blood sugar level is probably low most of the time. Your insulin level is probably low most of the time because you're not eating stuff that's spiking blood sugar, insulin, you're eating healthy things. Those things, your gut microbes like those foods, especially the, you know, the fish and the vegetables, they like that. So you're feeding your gut microbes and you're probably shifting your, you know, these longevity genes the right way, especially this one called mTOR. So my guess is that you're probably doing almost like a fasting mimicking diet. So you're not fasting per se, but I bet you're getting a lot of the benefits of it.
Yeah, I think I am. I think I told you, I think I preserved myself because I'm not getting any white hairs. I'm 47. So, hopefully
and
tomorrow.
And your hair looks great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, before you were talking about part of what you do is you focus on wellness. And earlier today, I actually had a webinar with another gentleman who wrote a book. And he was talking about the extra supplements you should take. And he mentioned vitamin D and magnesium. What are your thoughts?
So I'm a big fan of certain supplements. And we talk about this a lot in the book, and I'm a big believer in certain things. So I can, my biggest thing that I think everybody should take is turmeric.
Ah, really?
And you know, it's funny because that's actually another example. You know, I talked about how I noticed all these doctors are fasting. That's another thing. Almost all the doctors I know, they're all taking turmeric. You know, it's like, oh, of course you take turmeric. But then I don't think any of them really mentioned it to their patients that they should be taking turmeric. You know, they do it because they know it's the right thing. Not that they're trying to hurt their patients. It's just, you know, I don't know, you don't have time, you don't think about it. So it's one of those things, like the doctors know it, but a lot of people aren't taking. So turmeric is great. It's anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
It also decreases your risk of autoimmune diseases. It probably prevents Alzheimer's, cancer. You know, a lot of Southeast Asian cultures have been using it sort of both for food and medicinally for thousands of years, you know, so that's good stuff. If you take turmeric, which I recommend, you probably want to take it with some form of black pepper because that improves its bioavailability.
Oh, interesting. I put it in my eggs.
Yes.
My egg whites with my slice of eggplant, my peppers, my, you know, mushrooms.
Yeah. So take it, add it to your food. You could take it as capsules, you know, I take a few turmeric capsules a day, you know, scattered throughout the day. So that's one thing. I think there's something called resveratrol or taro still bean, which are similar. The resveratrol got a lot of attention. It was like in the skin of grapes and, you know, all these studies that like red wine is healthy for you. It's thought maybe because of the resveratrol. And then this taro still bean, which is similar, it's spelled with a P. It's not spelled the way it sounds. But
what is that? Where can you find that one?
You could get it on Amazon. You can get it anywhere. It's easy to get. It's actually cheap too. I think it comes from grapes and from blueberry skin.
Okay.
But the nice thing about it is it's better absorbed than resveratrol. It probably does the same thing. But that also seems to make you live longer and prevents a bunch of diseases. And these things seem to have no side effects, which are great. And they're cheap. So I'm a big fan of those things. I take a multivitamin. I know, you know, there's some controversy about this, but I eat a lot of vegetables like you, but I just think it's better to cover your bases. But if you're taking a multivitamin, I wouldn't get the one that have like 50,000% of everything. Mm-hmm. You just want to get enough of everything in your multivitamin. You especially don't want to get too much vitamin E. You don't want too much vitamin A. You don't want too much iron, you know, because those things can accumulate and they're not so great.
Your body can't get rid of them.
Yeah, it's hard to get rid of them, right. And so, iron is aging.
Really?
It's like rust, you know, like iron.
Really?
You know, yeah. Wow. So you don't want that. You want enough, but not too much.
Okay. So I have a funny story about multivitamins. We haven't talked about this, but I got mugged. So this arm here had, it's a bionic arm. There's a big long piece of metal in it. There's 12 screws that screwed my bone back together because
yikes.
When they got mugged, the bone was like in five places. And the doctor looked at me and said, your bones are never going to see each other again. we have to screw them back together. We have to put the plate in there and screw it back together. Anyway, it was perfect. The guy did a great job. It didn't hurt at all. I mean, like the next day they kept trying to give me, you know, the pain medicine. I was like, no, I don't need any pain medicine.
You had a good anesthesiologist.
Yeah. Oh, I think just, you know, as soon as they put the metal piece in there and the screws, I was fine. But anyway, I healed really fast. I mean, like in 6 weeks, like just, they couldn't believe how crazy fast it was. So my mom, as soon as this happened, gave me those little grape looking multivitamin things. And she says, you have to take two a day. And I think they're full of sugar. But when I would go to the doctor, he was look at the x-rays, like, I can't believe I've ever seen anyone heal that fast. I said, well, it's my mom's magic pills, which are the multivitamins. So there you go. I agree with the multivitamin thing.
And zinc. I'm a big fan of zinc. I take something every night called ZMA. It doesn't have to be that sort of specific formulation, but it's zinc and magnesium in it. Mm-hmm. Those are good for sleep. I think that's important.
Interesting.
Zinc and a lot of us are zinc deficient. And the thing is, zinc actually is another one of those things. You could take quite a bit of it. It seems to be pretty non-toxic. And it may have, it seems to help protect people from viral illnesses. There's actually a bunch of studies on this. And it seems the preponderance of the evidence is that it might. So in fact, there was a study where they looked at zinc with this is before COVID came out. But they looked at zinc in respiratory illnesses similar to COVID. And people that were taking it actually had shorter duration of symptoms and they were less likely to get sick.
Interesting.
So I'm a big fan of zinc.
Where do you find zinc naturally?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, you'll find zinc in certain nuts and in certain vegetables. Mm-hmm. So you can get zinc naturally, but zinc is one of those things. Also, it's cheap. It has those side effects. If you have too much of it, you can get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things. Just it's an easy thing to supplement. I would just take it. You don't really lose anything. Like I said, the stuff that scares me is like vitamin E, vitamin A, beta carotene, mm-hmm. these kind of fat-soluble vitamins. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had some studies where people were taking large doses of that. This is during, you remember the big antioxidant craze?
Yes.
You know, they thought everybody thought that was going to save them. So those are antioxidants. So people thought, well, if you just take huge doses of these things, you know, it's going to like save us from all this stuff. And it turned out that people taking it have actually higher rates of cancer than people not taking it. Like they were giving, you know, high doses of like a vitamin A like substance to smokers, thinking it would help reduce lung cancer, but it actually increased lung cancer. Mm. So you do need to be a little careful in what you take. But these fat soluble vitamins, I wouldn't go overboard.
So basically take a multivitamin, take zinc, turmeric, and magnesium.
Right. And either resveratrol or
resveratrol.
There are some other more interesting supplements that are not vitamins that we talk a lot about in the book that are hot that people might want to consider taking. Mm-hmm. There's something called nicotinamide riboside, NR, or nicotinamide mononucleotide, NMN. Mm-hmm. These things are much more expensive than everything else we mentioned. They have like patented processes of how they're made, which is why they're expensive. But those, a lot of longevity researchers kind of swear by these things. And there's growing evidence that may have huge benefits in terms of longer lifespan, preventing disease and that kind of thing. But there's still newer kind of things. There's less research on it. I take them from time to time. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably good. If you came to me and you're like, I really want to do more things, I would recommend it. So, and then there's another thing called ketone esters.
Okay. Where do you find that?
So that's actually a cool one. And this actually goes back to what you were talking about. And this is also like a hot thing. Uh-huh. So the other way, and I forgot to mention, the other reason fasting may help you is it may raise your ketone levels. And it's thought that ketones are good fuel for your brain.
Mm.
And they're bad fuel for cancer.
Ah, okay.
So it's interesting. So your brain can use either ketones for energy or sugar.
Okay. Right?
Cancer, for some reason, most cancer cells, they're really good with sugar. You give them sugar, they are happy as a clam. Like they metabolize sugar in a flash. They have trouble metabolizing ketones for energy, oddly enough. It's just a thing that most cancers have. So if you're in ketosis, meaning your blood sugar levels are low and your ketones are high, then you may actually provide your brain with lots of energy and fuel, but you wouldn't be providing your cancer cells with that, you know, which of course is what you want. So fasting helps raise your ketone levels, but you could actually take these ketones as a supplement. And I recommend if you do it, there are these things called ketone esters. That's the best way to do it. And I'll tell you, I've taken it myself. It's cool. It's one of the few supplements you could take that you actually feel that you're doing something when you've taken it. You can take as much turmeric as you want. You'll have no idea you took it.
Yeah.
But these ketone esters, you take it, you feel good. You're much more mentally clear. It makes you more awake, but it's not a stimulant. And it may actually increase your intelligence over time by increasing your nerve growth. So it's interesting. And I would get it over probably from Amazon. There's a company I like, Ketone Aid. Mm-hmm. Ketone Aid makes them. But you want ketone esters, I would recommend, instead of a cheaper version called ketone salts.
Aid. Okay. All right. That's a great tip. So my gosh, I guess it's part of reversing aging too, is the ketone esters would reverse aging if your brain is working better and memory is better. You know, you also have anti-aging in this book. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So there's a whole package of stuff.
Reversing aging. Okay.
Right. So there's a whole package of things you could do, I think, to reverse aging. So in my sort of sense, you could, so the way we've always thought about aging is that we kind of gradually decay, right? So, and I bring up an example in the book. You know, if you have, say you have a wooden table and you leave your wooden table outside, the wooden table, with time, it'll decay.
Right.
Rain goes on it, the sun goes on it, maybe termites might find it. And month after month, year after year, it's just going to kind of lose its luster. And there are things you could do to try to help the wooden table. Like you could keep repainting it. You could dry it if it gets rain. You could spray bug spray on it if it gets termites. There are little things you could do. But ultimately, the best thing you could do for that wooden table is just to bring it inside, your house.
Right. Right.
Just bring it inside. And so that one action of bringing that wooden table inside your house, it solves the termites. It solves the rain. It solves the sun. Now, the table still won't last forever. Nothing lasts forever. Right. But the table will last a lot longer with that one action. And so we think that aging is caused kind of by a combination of a few things. It's not this gradual decay. It's actually caused by, I don't know how into the weeds you want to get, but it's caused in part by epigenetic changes. Mm-hmm. So bear with me, this will be the only like sort of nerdy thing I try to make it. So all of your cells pretty much in your body have the same DNA.
Okay.
Your liver cells, your skin cells, your lip cells, your kidney, that your DNA is the same, but those cells are totally different from each other. Your liver cells and your kidney cells and your skin cells, completely different. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to convert one of those into the other. And they make different proteins and they respond to things differently. And a big part of the reason for that is something called epigenetics. So it turns out that your DNA, which is inside your cell, you know, the in your nucleus there, that's what codes for proteins. What your cells do is they put these little tags on the DNA. And what the tags do is they turn on and off certain genes. So you could have two different cells, say your liver cell and your skin cell, same DNA, but their tags are in different places. And these tags are somewhat reversible. But the liver cells have these tags that prevent skin genes from being expressed. And your skin genes have tags that prevent your liver genes from being expressed. That way, that's why you don't produce skin inside your liver. See? And so what happens is over time, you can actually make epigenetic errors. And what you'll do is you'll start accumulating these tags in the wrong place. And so cells don't function properly. They make the wrong thing. They're not as efficient. They start doing bad stuff, which damages their neighbors. So these epigenetic errors accumulate. Now, the reason why this is a good piece of news is those are reversible. DNA damage is hard to reverse. You know, if you go somewhere and you're exposed to tons of radiation, for example, like you're near, you say you get like 50 CT scans, lots of radiation, you're going to get DNA damage. It's hard to reverse that. But epigenetic damage is reversible. And so what you want to do is you want to turn on the right genes to fix these epigenetic mistakes. So that's one big way that that aging is reversible. And then the other causes of aging are there are these zombie cells inside your body called senescent cells. And
zombie cells.
And zombie cells, yeah. Okay. It's kind of a catchy name. And so what happens is, you know, your body has tons and tons of cells, right? And these cells, most of them don't live your whole life. They come and they go, you get them, they die, you get new ones, they replace each other, that kind of thing. And so what happens is that if a cell gets damaged or if a cell is no longer needed, what should happen, and this is kind of neat, is it does something called apoptosis. And apoptosis is when the cell intentionally kills itself. So if you have a cell, let's say you get a bunch of CT scans and you get a bunch of radiation to some cell and the cell has lots of damage. Remarkably, the cell can actually recognize, holy smokes, like I have all this damage. I'm messed up. And so the cell will send out these signals to have it kill itself, which is really cool. And the reason why that's good is because if it doesn't kill itself, it could start doing bad things. It could it could release poisonous things, or it could become cancer. So a lot of we all have a lot of, I guess, precancerous cells, but they kill themselves and they don't cause cancer. But there's something short of apoptosis called senescence, where what the cells do is they stop reproducing. They recognize there's a problem. They stop reproducing, but they don't die. And so what happens is, and we all have some of these cells in our body, but as you get older, you start accumulating more and more of these senescent cells. You get more and more of these cells that
They're like lazy.
Working anymore.
Yeah, they're lazy.
They're not doing what they're supposed to do. You know, they're not reproducing, which is good, but they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They won't die. And the other problem with them is they keep calling for help. They keep saying there's a problem. There's a problem. And so that causes inflammation and damages the nearby cells.
So you need to kill them.
You need to kill them. And so a big part of, right, you need to kill them. And so a big part of this anti-aging stuff is how could we kill these senescent cells that are accumulating in our bodies as we age?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then the third thing are there are these things called telomeres.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. So, you know, we all have DNA inside all of our cells, and the DNA is packaged in these things called chromosomes.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got little like packs of DNA in all of our cells called chromosome. And the chromosomes have these little tips on them.
Mm-hmm.
Called telomeres. They're just like the little plastic tips you have mm-hmm. on your shoelaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the reason why your shoelaces have those tips is they prevent the shoelace from fraying.
And
falling apart at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it turns out your chromosomes have these also. It's pretty neat. Mm. And it's like these repeating sort of DNA sequences, and they form the end of your chromosome. So what happens is as your chromosomes duplicate, when your cells duplicate, these telomeres shorten. Mm-hmm. And once your telomeres get too short, it's believed to be a sign of cellular aging. And so when that happens, either the cell can't reproduce anymore or it makes dysfunctional error-prone DNA. So there are things you can do to actually reduce this shortening. And there's even some ways of increasing the telomeres. So that's another sort of way that we could reverse aging.
So what are the mechanisms to kill the cells that are just lazy? Can you give us an example?
Yes. So there's something called autophagy. And autophagy literally, you know, if you take like the Latin, like auto, self, eat, phage is eat, right? So autophagy is eating yourself, if you will. And so if you think about it.
I'm sorry.
I know, it sounds crazy. It's like zombie cells, right? It's, you didn't realize your body was so barbaric.
Yeah.
So it turns out that all of us do this to some degree all the time. Like, we recycle things, you know, we have a bunch of crap inside our bodies that we don't need anymore. The cells that killed themselves, you clear away. Some things you just don't require and your body gets rid of. So autophagy is sort of this orderly process where your body eats unnecessary or bad stuff within your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways to stimulate autophagy is fasting. And there's a bunch of different ways to do this. Mm-hmm. Taro Stilbein is thought to do it. There's a number of things. So fasting is one of them. And so I'd like to use this as an example. Like imagine I took you and I stranded you on a desert island where you had almost no food.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you have water, but almost no food. So it's a desert island with an oasis, right? So you have water, but almost no food.
Okay.
So you're starving.
Uh-huh.
So your body obviously will try to keep you alive as long as possible. And you need energy. You need to feed your brain. You need to feed, you know, your activities so you can find food. So your body will start breaking itself down. Now, what will your body break down preferentially? Like your muscle and brain, stuff you need to live, or garbage that you don't need?
Garbage.
Your body will preferentially break down garbage because your body, you know, and this is how our ancestors had to deal with this problem all the time. They were constantly starving. So our bodies developed systems that allowed us to consume the garbage without consuming muscles. So if you fast, for example, most people, it's not like your biceps are going to, you know, just evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense evolutionarily for you to target your biceps or your brain.
Mm-hmm.
What you're going to target is the garbage. And so if you can get your body to do more autophagy, then you're getting your body to like stimulate the cleanup crew and get rid of this waste that you don't need anymore.
So what do you think about, you know, if you think about your book in the, in relationship to the pandemic that we have going on right now, is there a relationship? How would you say that the book could be applied for people during this time?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. So I didn't set you up for this, I swear. But I'm happy you asked. So there's two ways, actually. So one of them is, you know, when we talk about the pandemic and what to do about it, we focus mostly on social distancing kind of avoidance strategies, right? Not going out, not going on airplanes, wearing masks, washing our hands, keeping our physical distance from people. And those are all great things. But ultimately, and you should do them. I'm not telling you not to. So mm-hmm. In no way am I criticizing that. Mm-hmm. But those things don't really get rid of the virus. They just mm-hmm. make it spread slower.
Yes.
But the other piece that we don't talk about enough, in my judgment, is how could you beef up your immune system mm-hmm. so if you right. do get it, right. it's less harmful. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that you could do all the distancing you want and everything else, but there's a very good chance that you're going to get this. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. You may already have had it. You know, yeah. I don't know.
I think I already had it. But it was like for a half day, I wanted to sleep. You know, that was like right. what happened. But that's very unusual for me. So
you might have already had it. And there's all these studies coming out now that all these people, they found this in New York and in Northern California, that people had it, you know, all these people have antibodies to it and they never knew they had it. So some people, they get it and like, they don't know they had it, or it's like a little thing, like you're saying you've slept for half a day, and other people are in the ICU. Mm-hmm. So obviously you want to make it so if and when you get it, you're one of those people that has like a runny nose and a fever for a day mm-hmm. and not in the intensive care unit.
Right.
So I think doing things to improve your immune system are very important. And mm-hmm. in terms of improving your immune system, there are several clear things you can do that have been found with viruses similar to COVID. Again, a lot of these studies, you know, COVID is new, right? So the studies mm-hmm. are done before. But there was a remarkable study where they looked at people, they got volunteers. I don't know how they got volunteers for this. Like, I don't know who would do it. But they got volunteers to be exposed to a virus similar to COVID. Like, it causes respiratory stuff. Like, they actually squirted, like, the virus in their
nose. Oh,
that's gross. I don't know how they found these people. But people volunteered. And what they did is some people slept for 7 or more hours. And other people slept for less than 6. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it turned out that the people that slept less than 6 had 3 to 4 times the incidence of getting sick from this virus
wow.
than the people that slept 7 or more hours. Mm. It was very dramatic. Like an hour or 2 of sleep difference
wow.
had a huge effect on how these people responded to a virus very similar to COVID-19.
Get more sleep.
So one thing is get more sleep. Because I think if you don't have it already, you're probably going to get it. It's a matter of time. You yes. don't want to be in the ICU. So get more sleep. And then zinc is another thing. There's some mm-hmm. data, like we talked about, that zinc may be helpful. And then interestingly, another thing that seems to help with this is probiotics. And there were some pretty cool studies done. There was one that was looking at kind of like preschoolish age kids. It was done on kids, but there have been other studies. And what they found is some kids were randomized to get probiotics and other kids were not. And the mm-hmm. kids that had the probiotics ended up getting a much lower rate of these viral respiratory infections mm. compared to the non-probiotic kids. Mm-hmm. So I think it's likely that probiotics probably help. So, you know, none of these are magic bullet. Obviously, none of these will, you know, make up for you going in a huge crowd without a mask. You know, I want to be clear, you should still wash your hands and do anything else. But on top of that, you should sleep, you should eat zinc, and you should have probiotics. And then the one other thing, and maybe garlic too, oddly enough. There's
garlic.
Some research
oh,
with
I
garlic.
Oh, I love garlic. Yeah. So. Good.
When I heard that, I was happy to. But the one other thing I just want to touch on with this virus, which is a big problem, is that a lot of people are suffering from depression.
Right. They're inside. And yeah.
They're inside. You know, it's interesting. There was a study that looked at Canadians after, remember that SARS epidemic mm-hmm. some years ago? And so mm-hmm. in Canada, parts of Canada, they had these quarantines kind of similar to what we have. And what they did is these, I think they were ER doctors, they looked at these people quarantined. They had a huge rate of depression and post-traumatic stress mm-hmm. disorder, PTSD, just from the quarantine.
Right, of course.
Right, so.
I mean, we're gonna have that too.
Of course, right. So if you're not depressed, the quarantine may cause depression or at mm-hmm. least depressive symptoms or PTSD. And if mm-hmm. you are depressed, the quarantine will make things 1,000 times worse.
Right.
You know, because you're cut off from your support systems. You're cut mm-hmm. off from your friends or family. You're cut off from your therapist. Maybe certain activities still made you happy, like exercising or playing with kids or whatever. And now you can't do those things. Mm-hmm. You know, So depression is a real problem from these quarantines. And we talk a lot about depression and depression treatment in the book.
And then, of course, it comorbidities, because usually a lot of people who are depressed, they will eat a lot and then they're not fasting. And then it's
right. Right. They're not fasting. Right.
So is there any other nuggets that you'd want to bring out of that are in your book that you'd like to share with the listeners today?
Well, you know, I like talking about sleep because I think sleep's important. It's interesting. But the thing I wanted to say is wearable technology is cool. And I know you're very into tech and you're very into new yes. products and things like that. And yep. so I want to make at least this somewhat relevant to your interests. But, you know, so it turns out there's a lot of really cool health-related wearable technology now, and more stuff is coming out by the day. And, mm-hmm. you know, without getting into specific brands, there are certain product categories mm-hmm. that I think are awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, one of them is, it turns out, you know, sleep apnea is a big problem.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's when you snore and you kind of suffocate overnight, really, you know, mm-hmm. you're not breathing well and it costs yep. you to have bad sleep and you keep waking up and it's bad news. It turns out there are home sleep apnea tests that you could actually get for yourself. Now, they may not necessarily all be FDA approved. But the beauty is if you're one of those people and you snore or your spouse is like can't sleep in the same room as you, you know, because you're too loud, mm-hmm. you can get these things on your own if you don't want to bother going to the doctor and you could actually test yourself for sleep apnea. Now, you know, it's not 100%, but I'd much rather you do one of these things and have a 98% chance of knowing than you do nothing because you don't want feel like going to the doctor or you don't right. have to pay the copay or whatever.
Yeah.
So detecting sleep apnea on your own is one of those great things that I'm a big fan of. And then there are other medical devices. There are some great medical devices called the continuous glucose monitor, mm-hmm. the CGM. Mm-hmm. And this is awesome. And we talk a lot about this in the book and why doctors skip breakfast, but I love this, the continuous glucose monitor. So normally if you have diabetes, mm-hmm. you know, you've got that skin prick thing.
Yep.
And so, you know, any diabetic will tell you from time to time, they prick their skin and it hurts. And then they have to look and they see what their blood sugar is at a moment in time. Mm-hmm. So you get these little teeny snapshots of how things are going. But we now know that your blood sugar is important for diabetics and non-diabetics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have diabetes, but I think my blood sugar is important despite not having it. So what you can do is there's something called the continuous glucose monitor. And what it does, it's a little probe. You put it under the skin, like in your arm or in your, mm-hmm. your abdomen. And it tells you your blood sugar almost in real time, all the time throughout the day.
Wow.
Which is awesome. And so what it lets you do is it lets you see how you respond to foods. So let's say you and I, like we go out to lunch together, mm-hmm. right? And I know you don't eat carbs, but let's mm-hmm. pretend that you did, right? So okay. let's say we go out for lunch and you and I both get some, like say potatoes with our fish, mm-hmm. right? And you may eat that and it may turn out that your blood sugar after that meal skyrockets. Mm. Because you have a very brisk reaction to potatoes. Yeah. Whereas my blood sugar just goes up a little bit. Hmm. Now, we would never have known this,
right.
but we could look at our monitors, our glucose monitors. We could see that you had this huge reaction to the potatoes. Now, the next week, you know, because you treated me the first time, I treat you the next time. We go out for sashimi, let's say. Mm-hmm. And now we have our meal with a bunch of rice. We have rice and some fish. Mm-hmm. Now, this time, my blood sugar skyrockets. Because my body reacts to rice and causes a big blood sugar spike, but yours doesn't. It just goes up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, none of us would have ever known this.
Yeah.
But what we could say is in the future, I should probably avoid rice. And if I want carbs, I should stick with potatoes.
Potatoes.
If you want carbs, you should skip the potatoes and stick with rice.
Rice.
But right. we would never know this except by the fact that we're able to constantly monitor our blood sugar and see how we react to foods. And the same thing could be true for fruits or vegetables. Maybe grapes cause your blood yeah. sugar to skyrocket, but apples don't.
Huh.
And so there's a lot of neat things you can do by testing yourself. You know, Tim Ferriss is big on this kind of like testing yourself thing, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of cool new technology that lets you do that.
Hmm. Have you heard of Biome?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's a test for your poop to tell you what you can eat and what you shouldn't eat, what you should eat, and you shouldn't eat.
Yes.
You know, speaking of sleep apnea, we came in contact with this amazing startup together today that has a fabulous solution for sleep apnea. The company's name is called Whisper, and the guy who is the founder is Michael Nathans. So if you guys are on the phone and you're interested in that area, sleep apnea, instead of just moving you know, if you're married to someone who's snores a lot, just going into another room, check out this Whisper product. It's amazing. So,
oh yeah, I'd like to hear about that.
Oh gosh, it's really cool. Yeah, it's a hot startup, man.
Send me the link. Send me the
link.
I'll send you.
I'll send you his information.
Yeah.
You probably love talking to him. He's got a great his deck, by the way, is one of the best decks I've ever seen. his pitch deck.
Send me his stuff. I'll check it out.
So, sleep apnea and CGM are the two devices that you like, or anything else?
Yeah, I like a lot of devices. So, you know, there are these activity trackers, and there's all kinds of different ones. There's the Oura Ring, there's this Loop wristband, and to some degree, you know, even the Apple Watch could do it. I think this stuff is pretty good because people like it because of the counting the steps and stuff, and that's all fun. But what I like about it is it's good for also for sleep. Like, you know how much you're sleeping, you know when you're sleeping. It kind of gives you some insight into the quality of your sleep, how much you're tossing and turning, how often you wake up at night. And that stuff is important because I think ultimately the goal of the technology is it helps you figure out how you can improve your behavior to make yourself healthier with real feedback. Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example. There's all kinds of stuff, and I'm sure you've heard this, that blue light is poison for sleep.
Right. Yes, I have heard that. I heard that today, actually.
Yeah, it's a big problem. And, you know, we're bathed in blue light all the time. These LED lights, our phones, computers, like you name it, there's blue light everywhere. So now there's this kind of thing where, like, you make your phone yellow, you know, it's still not really clear whether that helps, but you change the light in your room. Like, I only have yellow lights in my room. Now people are even talking about having red lights.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Which I think is kind of funny, having red lights in your bedroom. It's kind of, it's kind of a funny thing, but that stuff probably works. And so, but the interesting thing is you could actually test this stuff on yourself. You could, for example, say you had an activity tracker or a sleep monitoring device. Mm-hmm. It'll kind of tell you how long it takes you to fall asleep.
Mm.
And, you know, you and I, we have a guess of how long it takes. So we don't really know for sure. And we also have a guess of the quality of our sleep, but we don't really know for sure. But say you had something that told you how long it takes you to fall asleep and the quality of your sleep. Then what you could do is you could take that information and experiment on yourself and figure out how you can change your life to make your sleep better. You know, everybody says using a phone before bed is bad news. Maybe in your case, using the phone before bed just didn't have much of an effect. Maybe it delayed your sleep 1 minute and had no effect on the quality of your sleep. But someone else, the phone may delay them 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You know, maybe having a late dinner doesn't affect you that much, but having a late dinner on someone else has this huge effect on their quality of their sleep. And so you can find these things out, and then you figure out what works for you, you know, because there's this whole thing of individualized medicine now, which I think is important. You know, we know like general rules, like we know that blue light is bad, but maybe for you it's not, or maybe for you it's especially bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
we have these general rules about stuff, but it would be nice to know, and now we could say what's right for us individually.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, so if you get these kind of activity and sleep tracking devices, you can experiment with yourself and figure out what works for you, which may not be what works for me.
Right. So by the way, the guy who wrote the book was from doctor to patient. And that's, I just learned about the red light today. I didn't even know about it. Cause when I hit the hay, I just fall asleep immediately. I'm like the dead. I'm like the dead. You can't wake me up. So, okay. Well, very interesting. This has been a wonderful conversation. I wanted to talk to you about what you've done in children's health and what you've done in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, because you've done a lot of that. So we're just going to have another podcast.
Sure.
But, you know, it would be great to do what we're launching, a challenge for children's health, to impact children's health. And one thing I would like to learn from your experience, you know, what do you think the biggest challenges are in children's health?
Well, there's a few. One of them is that it's hard to get new drugs to market. You know, you and I talked about this a bit. It's hard to get drugs. I mean, this is a whole big conversation, just to throw it out there. You know, it's hard to get drugs tested in kids. It's hard to get them labeled for pediatric use for a number of reasons. And so I think part of it is this sort of paucity of kids. Part of it also is, I mean, kids have worse health insurance on average than adults do.
Oh,
and so, You know, and it's actually really fascinating. So if you're a pediatric gastroenterologist, as an example, a doctor who takes care of kids' intestines and things, you're going to make a lot less money than an adult gastroenterologist will. The same is true for almost every pediatric specialty. And it's interesting. So for whatever reason, the way our medical system has evolved, we pay more money to people in adult related fields. I don't think it's necessarily like some intentionally grand design. It's just the way it works out. And so I think that to some degree that causes a brain drain. The same is true with children's hospitals. I mean, most children's hospitals are kind of chronically underfunded, and they depend on, most of them lose money, to be honest. And the reason the children's hospitals stick around is because there's a few rich people that donate to them, and so they have endowments. But their day-to-day operations, many children's hospitals actually lose money, which is a problem.
Yeah.
And kind of the way our healthcare system is set up. And I think also the other thing is there's just so much variability between kids. And, you know, it's this whole thing of personalized medicine again. You know, a neonate versus a one-year-old versus a 13-year-old, they're just totally different in terms of, they're almost different species. Like a neonate is almost as different from a 13-year-old as like a 2-year-old is from an adult.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot, there's just a lot, I guess, to pediatrics, and that they all deal with different things. And so maybe I'm biased as a pediatric anesthesiologist, but I think we probably don't put enough emphasis into appreciating all the age-related differences.
Yeah, so with the recruiting, the first thing that you mentioned about drugs for kids, I mean, so many people overdose kids because there aren't any drugs for kids in a particular area. So these adult drugs on the kids. And I mean, there are so many problems with recruiting children for clinical trials, especially with, you know, in disease areas that have high mortality rates, because, you know, once a kid starts taking the drug and it's painful, the mom doesn't want to have the kid in the trial anymore. So there's a lot of churn. So getting any good results in pediatric trials or children's trials for treatments is very, very challenging.
If I could just tell you, because I thought we were gonna talk about that, and I did some research, you know, before this, and there was a really good, I'll send it to you. There was this really good 2017 Scientific American article, if you haven't seen it, on this topic.
No, I haven't, no.
And it was really good. It was a couple years old, but they talked about, I mean, it was a bunch of stuff, but they talked about this Harvard found in 2016. Harvard looked at 550 studies, like, I don't know, an 8-year period or something on pediatrics. And of those studies, this is pretty mind blowing. These are studies that were like approved. 40% of them were either not finished or they were finished, but not published.
Yeah, I have a big problem with that. I have a big problem with that because how many times do we repeat the same mistakes? Over and over and over again, because bad research is never published. So somebody else might come up with the same idea. They'll look around for some publications on how would it work, how could it work, will it work? And if the publications, the research that exposes things that don't work, if that were to come to light, then we wouldn't be repeating using our $160 billion of taxpayer money to do the same thing over and over again.
And it's especially tragic in kids because
I know
you hit the nail on the head. It's so hard to get kids in these studies to begin with. You know, there's ethical questions, and the parents don't want to do it. There isn't much funding for it. So if you actually got a study going and then to not finish it and not publish it, it's almost like a crime, especially in pediatrics.
Yeah.
So, and it's surprisingly common.
Yes. Well, is there anything else you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I do want to say something, and this is like one of the big things I try to tell everybody, is that I think that we tend to feel that we're kind of passive observers of our own destiny in terms of health, especially. And we tend to think, well, our health happens to us. We get a disease, we get old, you know, we get depressed, we just can't sleep because that's just who we are. I'd like to leave people with the feeling that it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
And almost everything, whether even serious diseases like cancer, autoimmune diseases, bad sleep, depression, even things like poor focus, low energy, you name it, we actually have a lot more control over things than you think. And And I think to me, that's empowering.
Yeah,
because I just think there's so much you could do if you just make certain changes to your diet or to how you sleep or how you eat, or you do a few supplements or you change a few medications, you meditate, you have practice gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
If you just do a few things, it's surprising how much control you could have over your own health and body. And it makes me sad to think that so many people feel that just stuff happens to them and you can't really do anything about
it. But
I really think that you can. I mean, obviously sometimes things happen under control, but I think we have much more control over our own destiny than we think we do.
Mm. I love that. That's a fantastic message. You do have control over your destiny. And I saw a great study on gratitude in particular that you mentioned about how practicing gratitude every day prevents illnesses and sickness and all kinds of things. And of course it improves your lifespan. Well, you know, I really want to thank you so much for your time today. I'm really grateful that you took the time and you provided a lot of very valuable insights. So this has been fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you. I have gratitude that you had me on the show.
Good. You're fabulous. You're absolutely fabulous. Really great. So
thank
you again for your time today. And I might have to snag you again for to talk about some of the entrepreneurial ecosystem things that you did.
Anytime you want. Hopefully I'll have a better haircut by then.
you know, my nails are, I don't know if anyone can see my nails because my nails are such a mess right now. It's all right. We'll have better hair, better nails next time. And we'll be practicing gratitude for that a lot. So
exactly.
All right. Well, have a great day. That's your day. Thank you.